The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off today with a health article. And it's titled The Double Triple, and this is not a basketball double triple. A triple transplant, heart, liver, kidneys, is among the rarest of all medical procedures. In one 48-hour stretch, a team of doctors performed two back-to-back. And it starts off with a picture of a young lady with light brown hair. Looks like she's probably in her 20s. She is wearing a dress with a rather, well, not a rather, but a V front and cut in the front. And the very recognizable heart surgery scar is very visible. And also there's an African-American man. Looks like he's probably in his 40s. He's very severe-looking, good-looking young man. He looks like he's probably in his 40s. Sarah McFarland and Dave Smith were each received three new organs. Dave Smith was talking to his doctor and sister one day in December in 2018 when he began to die. He saw their forms grow dim, a dark curtain coming down on them, and himself in his fluorescent-lit hospital room at the University of Chicago Medicine. Then the 29-year-old, I'm sorry, he must be in his 30s, was above it all, looking into a hole in the ground where a torrent of water was swirling like a giant draining sink. And then he was in a hallway. At the end of it glowed a white light. He felt at peace. No more heart palpitations, no flutters, no aches. He saw pictures on a wall, scenes from his life, his son being born. It felt good, the light, until Daru realized, this is what happens when you die. He turned around and began to run. The light pulled him. I got a fight, he said to himself. Daru had been sick. A few weeks earlier, he had gone to the emergency room with a cold he couldn't shake. But tests showed it was much more than that. Daru was in cardiogenic shock, a condition which the heart can't pump enough blood to meet the body's needs. He also had something called sarcoidosis. That's S-A-R-C-O-I-D-O-S-I-S. Scariodosis, a rare autoimmune disease that can cause the body to overproduce certain cells that all but shut down again organs. In Daru's case, the heart, liver, and kidneys. That means Daru needed all three vital organs replaced, a procedure so complex and risky that only 15 had been performed in the country at that point. And he would need the rarest of donors, one with three healthy organs compatible with Daru's blood type, and strong enough to support his 6-foot-1-inch body. Still unconscious, Daru continued to fight the light, and his eyes fluttered open. Hey, where'd you go? Daru's cardiologist, Brian Smith. Thought we lost you for a second. And there's a picture of the surgeons. It's two women and a gentleman. The surgeons left are Yolona Becker, who did the kidneys, Talia Baker, the liver, and Valavan and Jivananandama, heart. The first lady is Oriental, second lady is Anglo, third man is I guess, Thai or some of the Asian aspect. Sarah McFarland sat in a spare room at UChicago Medicine waiting to plead for her life. She was there to meet with the center's transplant evaluation team. As different as Sarah was from Daru, she'd grown up in a tree-lined suburb of Detroit, gone to graduate school, traveled the world. He was raised by a mother who managed a Harold's Chicken Shack in Chicago, when he worked until he found a better-paying job as a truck driver. They were, in more important ways, alike. Like Daru, Sarah was 29, a rare autoimmune disease and inflammatory condition called giant cell myocarditis, had attacked her heart. At 12, Sarah had a heart transplant, but over the years, the replacement organ also began to fail. Surgeons had to open her chest 5 more times to repair ongoing problems. Complication from years of procedures and medications had all but destroyed her liver and kidneys. Her only hope, too, lay in a triple transplant. But there were some ugly realities that needed to be addressed. The degree of difficulty of a heart transplant doubles with each previous cardiac operation. Sarah's numerous procedures had left her heart buried in scar tissue. This hostile chest, as surgeons call it, makes it harder for them to locate the arteries and veins they will need to disconnect and reattach. What's more, she was so physically weak that the doctors weren't sure she could survive a grueling surgery. And then there's the macabre math that goes into such decisions. A triple transplant means using three organs that could potentially have three other patients. Does it make sense to use them on a single long shot? Heart specialist Nir Uriel, MD, was at first skeptical about Sarah's case. She was as pale as the hospital sheets. She had almost no muscle mass. Her chest seemed to have collapsed in on itself, while fluid swelled her arms and abdomen. She could barely speak a sentence without gasping for breath. But when Dr. Uriel asked her what she would do post-transplant, the words she could get out moved him. She'd travel, she said. Maybe to Europe, where she had visited as a student in high school. She'd restart her career as an occupational therapist. Beyond that, she loved spending time with her family. They were inseparable. Oh, and there would be Michigan State games. How could she forget about her alma mater? Before the day was out, Sarah had spoken to nearly 30 members of the transplant evaluation team. Afterwards, they unanimously voted to move forward, each one seeing what Dr. Uriel saw, someone who, though facing death, radiated life. For both Sarah McFarland and Darrow Smith, it was now a waiting game, waiting for organs to become available, waiting to put in blunt terms for the right person to die. But at their darkest point, a bright stop flickered. The two patients, just two doors apart in the ICU, met. Over the following weeks, a bond developed. Sarah and Darrow could be seen comparing notes as they walked laps around the floor together, challenging each other on how many trips they could make, laughing at what they must look like in their gowns, with tubes and machines trailing behind. Their go-to phrase became, "You got this." And there's a picture of Darrow sitting in a chair with a nurse looking at monitors. He's got his robe on and his trousers all wired up. At 3:15 on Tuesday, December 18th, 2018, the pager of Jamie Bucco, lead coordinator of UChicago Medicine Organ Procurement Team, buzzed with an alert. A potential match for Darrow had been declared brain dead. The young man's heart, liver, and kidneys were intact and strong, and his family had agreed to donate the organs. Buccio and her five-person team had 1 hour to respond with a preliminary acceptance of the organs. Otherwise, they would go to the next patient on the waiting list. Every moment of that hour was crucial. First, Buccio collected information on the organs. What kind of shape were they in? Were they good matches? Then she and her team alerted the surgeons and the attending physicians, sending them medical records of the intended recipient. If everyone approved, then and only then would the patient be notified that a transplant was a go, and it would be happening in a matter of hours. After hearing back from all the surgeons, Buccio called the attending physician, "Tell Darrow it's time." "You ready?" Dr. Smith asked Darrow as he walked into his room. "For what?" "Are you ready?" he repeated, smiling. Now Darrow smiled too, the realization dawning on him. "All right then," said Dr. Smith, "let's do this." On most days, the white-filled tiled hallway just outside the operating room 5 was deserted, save for the occasional flock of surgeons, nurses, and orderlies. But on this day, December 8, 19th, just before 3 p.m., 24 hours after Jamie Bucco got the call, an unusually large contingent of 20 medical staff members milled about. The start of the show was the hospital's head cardiac surgeon, Valerian Jeevananabhanan. It's an interesting name. It's Jeevananadam. He'd be performing Danu's heart transplant, the initial procedure upon which the rest of the undertaking rested. As Dr. Jeev and his team began prepping for the first leg of the marathon surgery, two floors below, Darrow was being wheeled away from his ICU room and his family. Meanwhile, three SUVs arrived, carrying two surgical teams, one for the heart and one for the liver and kidney, sped across the city to retrieve the donor organs. Speed is of the essence. A heart needs to be implanted within 6 hours and ideally within 4 hours of being removed from a donor. Dr. G made his first cut at 3:07 p.m., timing it to when the doctor at the other hospital began removing the donor's heart, inserting the rib spreader and stainless steel retractor used to lay bare the chest cavity. He began to crank slowly. Darrow was then hooked up to the heart-lung bypass machine and major arteries to his heart clamped shut, leaving him without a functioning heart for what would be 102 minutes. And then the removal process began. The donor organ, packed in a Tupperware pickle jar, bathed in a preservation solution, and chilled to a medical box similar to an igloo cooler, arrived at 5:04 p.m. Darosarcoidosis presented a complication for Dr. Jeeve. A healthy person's tissue is like a supple leather, which helps it fuse with sewn together. Much of Daru's tissue was more like cardboard, so the doctor had to be extra careful not to rip it while sewing in the new heart. That accomplished, Daru was ready to be taken off the bypass machine. In transplant surgery, it's always a tense moment when the aortic clamp is removed. To preserve heat for transplant, doctors fill it with a solution high in potassium. Preserve a heart for transplant. If all goes well, when the clamp is removed, the whoosh of blood into the heart restores normal levels of potassium and other electrolytes, and the heart begins to beat. In Daru's case, the heart didn't beat. Not panicking, Dr. Jeeve picked up the forceps and gently massaged the heart, trying to tickle it back to life. Finally, a dot began to hop up from the lung, long, flat green line on the screen across the room. With act, Dr. Jeeve stepped back. 4 hours after beginning the surgery, his part was done. It was 7 p.m. While Dr. Jeeve's assistants affixed drainage tubes and packed the area around the heart with gauze to absorb blood, Talia Baker, M.D., the surgeon performing the liver transplant, and her team were already setting up. There are some 180 steps in performing a liver transplant, but Dr. Baker's main challenge with Daru was the state of his liver. A healthy liver has the spongy consistency of a jellyfish, what makes it pliable. A cirrhotic or scarred liver like Daru's is firm, so manipulating is more difficult, raising the risk of damage to the tissue around the organ when removing it. With liver transplants, there's always a fear that the absence of oxygen and nutrient-rich blood can damage the newly transplanted organ once the blood flow is restored. That damage can cause the heart and lungs to collapse, resulting in death. In Daru's case, though, the new liver handled the blood flow as if it was supposed to. At 11:46 p.m., 8 hours and 39 minutes after the surgery began, the second portion of his transplant was complete. All that remained was the kidney. Around that time, Buccio got a page that stunned her. A young woman in another state had been declared brain dead. She was a potential match for Sarah, and she had three healthy organs. Buccio called Dr. Smith, Sarah's attending physician. "Well, I guess nobody's going to get any sleep for the next 48 hours. No hospital had ever performed two triple transplants within a year, and yet UChicago Medicine was preparing to begin its second in just over a day. Doctors and nurses would be working on little or no sleep. The surgeons would need some 700 instruments for each of the two triple transplants, all of which would have to be cleaned, sterilized, and inspected. No small task, since there were also three other transplants happening at the hospital at the time, one of which was a double kidney and liver. Was it even possible? It had to be. The offer of three matching organs simply could not be turned down. Bucci had already sprung into action, working out the logistics. Because Sarah's organs were coming in from some distance, UChicago Medicine would need two jets, plus ground transportation to and from both airports. At 8:18 a.m. on December 20th, Darru's triple transplant was complete. After more than 17 hours in surgery, he was moved back to the ICU. 10 hours later, Sarah's triple transplant began. As Dr. Jeeve had anticipated, the heart portion of Sarah's surgery required extra care, taking longer than Daru's. The scar tissue that had built up in her chest from the past surgeries made hunting for the arteries and the veins seem like an archaeological dig. Just as an archaeologist uses little brushes to care for clear away dust and debris, Dr. Jeeve had to use special instruments to tease apart the tissue to find the arteries underneath. A miscalculation of a single millimeter with a scalpel could cause a nick in the heart itself. And there's a picture of Dr. Jeeve and Sarah and her mother looking at a video of the action. Sarah's liver posed a special challenge as well. Because she had been on immunosuppressive drugs for most of her life, her tissues were fragile. Dr. Baker had to work slowly and precisely, taking painstaking care with each incision and suture. Volanda Becker, M.D., was the last up. And as the final surgeon, she had not only performed the kidney transplant, but also made sure the heart and liver were still functioning, which meant keeping a close eye on all of Sarah's vital signs. She also had to navigate the minefield of drains and chest tubes and pacemaker wires left in place by the previous two surgeons. Dislodge any of the tubes or drains, and she might not notice any internal bleeding. Detach a pacemaker wire and the heart could develop a dangerous arrhythmia without her knowing. By the time her surgery was done at 2:27 p.m. on Friday, December 21st, Sarah had been on the table for more than 20 hours. UChicago had accomplished the unthinkable. Two triple transplants in less than 2 days. Just days after the surgery, Sarah was amazed by how good she felt. Before the transplant, she had gained 45 pounds of water weight. It was nice to have her normal legs again. She also felt out of breath and cold all the time, a result of poor circulation caused by her failing heart. Now she didn't have to constantly be swaddled in a blanket or coat. But the two patients' recoveries were not without complications. 2 weeks after the transplant, Sarah registered low magnesium levels, requiring weekly infusions of the mineral, which keeps the heartbeat steady and maintains nerve and muscle functions. She also had struggled with a low white blood cell count, necessitating booster shots. And yet she's more active than ever. She exercises regularly, and last February she participated in Hustle Chicago, a charity stair climb event to the very top of the former John Hancock building, 90 floors up. As for Darrow, a month after the operation, surgery placed a sheet in one of his bile ducts to open up a blocked passageway. A stent in one of his bile ducts open up a blocked passageway. Other than that, he's been working out and actually seeing results. And there's a picture of the two of them standing side by side, both of them with huge smiles on their faces. Good looking pair, too. Sarah and Darrow had intended to meet up after leaving the hospital, but life and eventually the COVID-19 pandemic conspired against them. Instead, Sarah sends Darrow banana bread, and they text each other 3 or 4 times a week. They also have a regular group chat with two other triple organ recipients, both of whom had their operations after Sarah and Darrow. Darrow appreciates the camaraderie. There were days when the pain and the boundaries placed upon him due to his compromised immune system made him wonder whether the triple transplant was worth it. No one can relate to what it's like walking around with 3 new organs, Darrow told Reader's Digest. But on these calls, you have the people who truly understand you, from your risk factors to your benefits. A few days after Sarah's discharge on January 7, 2019, Darrow was granted his own release from the hospital. He had called home for 8 weeks. As he was wheeled through ICU toward the elevator, nurses, doctors, and administrators clapped and shouted goodbyes. "You are loved here," the orderly pushing his wheelchair said. They turned one corner and then another, and then they stood looking down the final hallway. At the end of it shone what looked like a bright white light. The orderly pushed him forward, and as he did, the source became clear, a set of white double doors illuminating by a bright disk of light in the ceiling. The white grew brighter until Darren was on the other side, where he saw a familiar car and his sister standing beside it, smiling and waiting to take him home to his son. Happy Michael King Day. Little Martin Luther King Jr. was called Michael, the name on his birth certificate inspired by a trip to Germany in 1934. King's father, Michael Sr., changed his own name to Martin Luther King. Then he changed a 5-year-old son, too. Now a first-person article. "Use a hanky, dude." He has used a pocket handkerchief all his life and was ridiculed for it. Now this famous author says his habit has found its moment. Scott Turow. The text from his son said it all. "Dad, there's an article you were born to write that the world is finally ready for. Bring back the handkerchief." As my son knows, there's no bring back for me. For me, the handkerchief never left. Me neither. My mother raised me with several fixed rules. One was that a gentleman always has a clean handkerchief in his right rear pocket. That's where mine is. A piece of simple cotton, roughly 15 inches square, and less than 4 inches when folded. I was a dutiful son, but I can recall being a 10-year-old on the school playground, feeling the padding directly over my butt and wondering what it was there for. Time would tell. Every night, for most of my life, I have removed from my trousers the items I'm going to need the next day. Keys, wallet, and hanky, if it's still unused. After 60 years, I am like the princess in The Princess and the Pea. My body weight feels wrong if I'm heading out the house with an empty back pocket. I'm sure this habit has sometimes struck friends and colleagues who've noticed as a little quaint, but in polite company, nobody comments on somebody else's trivial eccentricities. That rule of behavior, of course, did not apply to one's children in the late 20th century. When my 3 kids were growing up, they all let me know what they could handle my hanky as ridiculous old-fashioned as a top hat and walking stick. They had their arguments. If you had to be prepared every day for allergies or cold, why not tote a little packet of tissues, which saves you from the disgusting business of blowing your nose in the thing and then stuffing it back in your pocket. Point taken, especially in the time of COVID-19. But a cotton handkerchief is a lot more durable than tissue, creates no waste, and has a far wider variety of uses. One reason my kids saw that handkerchief often was because of the epic number of chocolate mouths, skinned knees, and drippy noses that Hanky wiped. Can you grab the handle of a pot that's boiling over with a Kleenex? Now that I am a grandfather of five, my Hanky again has been getting a workout. When friends become grandfathers for the first time, I often send them a dozen handkerchiefs as a small gift. Hold on to these, I say. You're going to need them. In fact, for Father's Day last year, my wife gave me several new handkerchiefs embroidered with my grandpa name, Pops. Her gift was a tacit admission, from her subsequent comments. I take it that the first time that handkerchief came out, right after we started dating, she thought to herself something like, "Holy smokes, what a geezer." But by now, neither of us count the number of times her eyes have welled up at a movie, a tickle won't leave her throat in the theater, or, as happens, she needed to blow her nose and timidly whispered, "Can I borrow your handkerchief?" Yet not even Mom could have anticipated the hanky's new role as an essential public health appliance. All of us has learned how hard it is to follow Center for Disease Control and Prevention's advice in this coronavirus-plagued area about not touching your face. Here's an answer. Got an itch on your eye or in your nose that you just have to scratch? Facing those frequently touched places, such as elevator buttons and door handles that seem full of peril? Use your hanky, dude! Here, let me add a sober note to the best practice. Touching your face with a coronavirus-infested hanky is not much better than doing so with a dirty hand. The solution is to carry multiple hankies in different pockets. And, of course, if you use a handkerchief for virus protection, wash it thoroughly with soap and hot water as soon as you can. That said, your handkerchief can be even more useful in protecting others from you, especially if you are one of those asymptomatic coronavirus carriers. In April, the CDC recommended wearing masks when you're out of the house. This one can be turned into a do-it-yourself mask by folding several times and applying two rubber bands 6 inches apart. In a pinch, if you have no rubber bands, your handkerchief can become a makeshift bandana that can be pulled over your lower face like a robber entering a bank. My son has it right. Bring back the pocket handkerchief. It may actually save a few lives, and it will certainly give me the chance to channel my mother, to lift my chin and look at my adult children through one eye, asking her in a good-hearted way, "What do you have to say now, smarty pants?" I love this article. This is so good. Looking on the sunny side, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothes, Norwegian proverb. And with that, we're going to switch over to Consumer Reports. CR Insights. Does your LG refrigerator have cooling problems? And I will just do a little personal stuff in here. I volunteered at the USO at Raleigh-Durham Airport for a number of years. And, of course, they're closed now because of the crisis. But they had an LG. They had four refrigerators. One of them was an LG, and we have more problems with that refrigerator doing it. So, anyway, if you own an LG French door or side-by-side refrigerator manufactured between January 1st, 2014, and December 31st, 2017, you might be entitled to anywhere from $50 to more than $3,500 in compensation as part of a class action lawsuit LG settled in September. The lawsuit alleged that almost 1.6 million LG refrigerators sold might stop cooling because of compressor-related problems. The settlement covers 61 models, which are listed with the relevant serial number ranges at lgfridgesettlement.com. If you own one of the covered models, the deadline to file a claim for the past cooling problem is, well, we missed it, it's January 11th, 2021. Go to lgrefrigerator.com to fill out a claim form. You can also email or physically mail a completed form to LG. In the settlement agreement, LG maintains that the refrigerators are not defective and denies any wrongdoing. We agreed to the settlement to avoid further litigation costs and in the interest of customer satisfaction, says John Taylor, Senior Vice President of LG Electronics, USA. Still, LG is providing owners of models covered in the settlement with an extended 5-year warranty from the purchase date and LG's enhanced customer care program for any future repairs related to the problem, even if you have yet to experience cooling problems, as long as the cooling issue occurs within 5 years of the purchase date. If your fridge already needed repairs, LG is also offering monetary compensation if you file a claim by the deadline. But the amount awarded varies on the case-by-case basis. How LG fridges rate in our CR's reliability surveys. In our member surveys of French door and side-by-side fridges, LG's predicted reliability ratings are just good, rather than very good or excellent. But none of the other 16 brands we surveyed in these categories rate even better, and a few even rate worse. So CR still recommends certain models of LG French door and side-by-side fridges that perform well enough and are vigorous ratings. LG's Kitchen Suite, Coach, Cafe, Platter, and Paycle, Kenmore, KitchenAid, Whirlpool, Arena, and Maytag Monogram are all yellow. Samsung, Frigidaire, and Viking are orange, and Electrolux is red, which is bad. Side-by-side, LG, Kenmore, KitchenAid, Samsung, Whirlpool, LaManna, Frigidaire, GE, and Maytag are orange or yellow, I guess, and Bosch, Cafe, and Electrolux are all orange. January is the best time to buy bedding and linens, humidifiers, ellipticals, and digital scales. Recalls. Volkswagen vehicles. Volkswagen is recalling more than 218,000 Jetta sedans from 2016 to 2018 model years to repair a problem in which bolts in the engine may loosen over time, potentially leading to a fuel leak that could cause a fire. Drivers may notice a fuel odor or see leaking fuel coming from the engine compartment, according to a document from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. What to do? Drivers who notice a fuel smell or leak in any vehicle should immediately pull over to a safe location and shut off the vehicle. Never drive or run a vehicle that smells of fuel or is leaking, says John Ibbotson, CR Chief Automotive Service Manager. Then contact an authorized Volkswagen dealer who will be able to provide towing. The manufacturer says the fix involves replacing the fuel rail bolts and, if necessary, the fuel rail. Owners can also contact Volkswagen at 800-822-8987. Prestone antifreeze. Prestone, and that's important this time of year, Prestone is recalling about 687,000 antifreeze products, 14 different models under 6 different brand names, because they contain ethylene glycol, which must be in child-resistant packaging, as required by the Poison Prevention Packaging Act. The product's caps are not rotated through during manufacture to gauge the child-resistant mechanism, posing a risk of poisoning if the contents are swallowed by young children. The products were sold at Ace Hardware, Advance Auto Parts, AutoZone, O'Reilly Auto Parts, Highline, Home Depot, Lowe's, Pep Boys, and Walmart stores online or and online between January 2020 through May 2020. For $10 to $22. What to do? Twist the cap until the child-resistant mechanism is engaged. Call Prestone at 888-269-0750 or go to Prestone.com. Endless Technology phone cases. Endless Technology is recalling about 367,000 Trianium cell phone battery pack cases because the lithium-ion battery inside can overheat, posing a burn hazard to consumers. The cases were sold on Amazon from September 2014 through July 2020 for $30 to $100. What to do? Stop using the phone case and dispose of it following local laws on battery disposal. Call Endalize at 844-609-0874 or go to trianium.com/recall details and get a free replacement power pack. Jack's Pacific Scooters, that's J-A-K-K-S. Jack's Pacific is recalling about 162,000 Morph Board Skate and Scoot combo scooters with Y handlebars because the handlebar can break, posing a fall hazard. The scooters were sold at Walmart, Target, Toys R Us, Meijer, and BJ's Wholesale Clubs, and at Amazon and Morphboard.com from February 2018 through August 2020. For about $100. What to do? Take the scooter away from children and contact Jack's Pacific at 855-602-5464 or go to jacks.com to receive a free replacement T handlebar. Cobalt Cordless Electric Chainsaws. Hong Kong Sunrise Trading is recalling about 115,000 Cobalt folder lithium cordless electric chainsaws. because the chainsaw can remain on the on position, posing a laceration hazard. The chainsaws were sold at Lowe's stores and online at Lowe's.com from January 2014 through March 2020 for about $200. What to do? Stop using the chainsaw and contact Hong Kong Sunrise Trading at 855-378-8826 or go to GreenWorkStools, that's GreenWorkStools.com, for details and to arrange a free repair. Peloton bike pedals. Peloton is recalling about 54,000 PR70P clip-on pedal fitted with about 27,000 Peloton bikes because the pedals can break unexpectedly during use, posing a laceration risk. The pedals were sold at onepeloton.com and through Peloton telephone sales and showrooms from July 2013 through May 2016. The pedals were on the Peloton bikes that were sold for about $2,000. What to do? Stop using bikes fitted with these pedals. Peloton is notifying all affected consumers directly on how to receive free replacement pedals, along with instructions and self-installation. Call Peloton at 844-410-0142 if you have questions. Bed Bath & Beyond chairs. Bed Bath & Beyond is recalling about 10,000 Salt Lounge chairs because the locking mechanism on the chair frame can disengage, posing a fall hazard. The chairs were sold at Bed Bath & Beyond stores and online at bedbathandbeyond.com from April 2020 through August 2020 for about $40. What to do? Stop using the chairs and return them to any Bed & Bath & Beyond for a full refund or a credit if the purchase price can't be determined. Go to bedbathandbeyond.com for details. Now, the next article, a product update, is interesting because if this had been a couple years ago, I probably wouldn't read this article because it's about snowblowers. And the area where we are in the triangle is not exactly a high snow area most often. Occasionally we get it, but not enough to warrant a purchase of a snowblower. However, now that we cover the whole state, many of our areas do have a lot of need for a snowblower. The right snowblower for you. Here, the basics for when you don't want to shovel your way through another snowstorm. And there's a picture of a guy, actually he's testing it in, looks like dirt rather than snow. Big, huge snowblower. Wet sawdust mimics heavy snow. So see our test engineer, Eric Hoda, can keep testing even when there's no snow is falling. And when the day I'm recording this also is two days before our first predicted snowfall in this area. When it comes to yard tools, few are more essential than a snowblower that works when you need it to. If your lawnmower won't start, your grass just grows a little shaggy until you can get it repaired. But if your snowblower won't start, you could be shoveling for hours just to pull out of your own driveway. How do you find a snowblower that won't leave you stranded? Check Consumer Reports reliability ratings and see which of brands are the least likely to give you problems based on data from CR members who own them. We rate the three types of snowblowers on the market, single stage, two stage, and three stage. That makes sense. Stage here refers to the mechanism used to collect and throw snow from the machine. And the more stages there are, the more powerful the snowblower is. Single stage snowblowers rely solely on a high-speed auger to collect a corkscrew-shaped device to collect snow and send it out through the chute. Because they scrape the ground, they're not the less choice for dirty or gravel driveways. Two-stage machines add a fan-like impeller raising behind the raised auger to help throw the snow out of the chute with more force, which is useful in bigger snowfalls. Three-stage models have an additional piece of machinery, an accelerator for even faster snow clean. Snowblowers are powered in one of three ways, by gas, via a battery, or with a power cord plugged into an outlet. Single-stage machines are available in all three options. Most two- and three-stage snowblowers are gas-powered. Based on our tests, gas models generally outperform their electric and battery-powered counterparts. The best snowblower for your needs depend on how much snow you use to get. Here, we break down the right type of snowblower for you based on the typical snowfalls in your area. You can check the snowfall report by entering your city and state at the National Weather Service website. We also show you the most important features to look for and how to troubleshoot your common snowblower problems. If you get 6 inches of snow or less per storm, a single-stage battery-powered snowblower may be your best choice for tackling this level of snowfall. This type is easy to maneuver and is particularly adept at clearing paths, walkways, and decks. Heavier gas snowblowers can be more difficult to handle. Battery-powered models have prices similar to those of gas models, and you don't have to deal with snoring gasoline. CR advises skipping corded models. None we've tested in the past 5 years performed well enough for us to recommend them. If you get up to 9 inches of snow per storm, if your area usually experiences moderate snowfall, you'll want a single-stage gas snowblower. These are smaller, lighter, and easier to maneuver than the 2- and 3-stage gas models, but they're generally more powerful than battery models. The exception based on our test is the new EGO 2-stage battery snowblower, which could have no problems handling moderate amounts of snow. Gas models require an annual oil change. The job is pretty easy. You just drain the oil into a pan and refill it with the type of oil specified in your owner's manual. Neglecting this task can cause the engine to wear and even die prematurely. One important caveat. For the single-stage gas blower, the occasional big snow, we're talking over 9 inches, can be challenging. You'll need to blow halfway through the storm, as long as it's safe to do so, instead of waking a single pass at the end. If those big snows aren't a regular occurrence, it makes sense to go smaller rather than pay more for a heftier snowblower. If you get up to 16 inches of snow per storm, like you're in the mountains, if you live in a perpetual winter wonderland, we recommend that you go for a 2-stage gas snowblower. While they can be expensive, anywhere from $400 to $3,100, they're less than cleaning. They're best for cleaning a big snowfall. They can be heavy and bulky, often weighing 200 to 300 pounds, but most have features designed to make handling easier, such as self-propelled wheels and steering clutches. Dave Trezza, who oversees snowblower testing at Consumer Reports, says that even with these features, it's not like pushing a lawnmower. It's more like pushing a big, heavy wheelbarrow. As with the single-stage gas models, you need to change the oil annually to keep your snowblower ready for the next winter. If you get more than 16 inches of snow per storm, oh my gosh, you need a powerful snowblower, so opt for a 3-stage gas model. Accelerator in these snowblowers helps them suck up and expel snow even faster than many of the best 2-stage models. They're expensive. The prices range in those ranges range from $1,200 to $2,600, but you get a lot for the money, including features such as headlights and heated hand grips that are standard on the models in this category. These machines are quite heavy, though. Certain models top out at around 300 pounds, which can make them harder to handle and maneuver than more modest 2-stage machines. 5 snowblower features to look for. If you opt for a 2- or 3-stage machine, some of these features can help make your work easier. Note that certain features, as mentioned here, are found on only the larger models. Heated hand grips. With these, you'll be able to wear thinner gloves, which will make it easier for you to maneuver your snowblower. Multiple speeds. A model with 2 or 3 more speeds allow you to slow down to tackle a snowbank at the end of your driveway, or speed up for areas with lighter snow. Easy chute controls. A joystick or crank control lets you change the chute direction with one hand while keeping the other hand on the snowblower so you won't have to stop the auger. Airless tires. Solid plastic tires won't puncture or go flat, which is especially helpful if your driveway is unpaved or rough. They're rarely standard, but certain manufacturers sell them as an add-on. A headlight. You'll appreciate being able to see where you're going if you're out when it's early morning or dusk. How to fix common snowblower troubles. The problem. The blower won't start. That's a good one. If you have a gas model, first check to see whether there's gas in the tank. If the gas blower has an electric starter, make sure the blower is plugged into an outlet. Otherwise, if the gas is more than 30 days old, ethanol in the fuel may help cause moisture to build up in the fuel system. Use a gas siphon to drain the gas from the blower, then refuel with fresh stabilized gasoline and try again. For electric models, make sure that the tool is plugged in or that the battery is fully charged. The problem, the engine runs, but the auger won't turn. With the engine off and key removed, inspect the auger and or the pillar for oblique for obvious problems, such as a rock or a chunk of ice that's keeping the moving parts from turning. Next, inspect the shear pins, typically located near the auger. Check your manual for the exact location. These pins will break when your blower hits an obstruction like a rock, and then the auger will stop working. Replacing these pins should get your snowblower working again. You can buy them online or stores. It's always smart to keep a few extra on hand. The problem. The auger or discharge chute is clogged. Turn off the engine if a gas snowblower, or unplug the cord, or remove the battery of an electric model. Use a clearing tool or broom handle to clear the clog. Never your hands or feet, even if you're wearing gloves. A stationary auger and impeller are often under enough belt tension to harm hands and feet, even with the engine or electric motor off. The snowblower runs rough. If your gas blower is shaky or dirty when you're on, there may be a problem with the fuel combustion. Check the fuel or spark plugs. Each is fairly simple to do. First, drain the fuel from the tank and refill it with fresh gas. Next, try replacing the spark plug by disconnecting the rubber boot attached to the plug and removing the plug with a ratchet wrench. You'll need a special spark plug socket, available at home centers or automotive stores. Replace the plug with a new one. If neither of these work, you have to take the snowblower to a dealer for repair. Call the manufacturers to locate one near you. And here's a listing of the different snowblowers. Single stage, best for light snow up to 8 inches. I'm sorry, up to 6 inches. The Toro Power Clear E21, $650. The Snow Joe ION100V, that's $800. Two-stage battery, best for light to medium snow up to 9 inches. The Ego SNT, and that's at $1,300. And the single-stage gas for light to medium snow up to 9 inches. The Toro Power Clear 821, $750. The Toro 824 QXE, $880. The two-stage gas, best for medium to heavy snows up to 16 inches. Let's hope we don't see that around here. Toro Power Max OAE at $1,400. The Choi Built Arctic Storm at $1,500. The Toro 38842, $1,800. The Aries 926078 for $3,100. The Cub Cadet 2x 30-inch, $1,200. The Aries Deluxe 30, $1,800. Simplicity at $1,500. And the DR Power Equipment at $800. Three-stage gas, best for heavy snows of more than 18 inches. The Cub Cadet at $2,800. The Cub Cadet, I'm sorry, that's the 3X 30-inch Pro H. The Cub Cadet 3X 30-inch HD, $1,700. And the Cub Cadet 3X 26-inch Track at $1,800. Your ultimate smart home toolkit. How to connect smart speakers, doorbells, vacuums, TVs, and even sprinkler system to a better organized control and protect your home, plus CR's top-rated smart home products. Our homes have been pulling this is unreadable. The print is really bad. But let's do smart speakers. $40 to $600. A smart speaker digital assistant, Amazon Alexa, Google's assistant, and Apple Siri can serve as the brains of a smart home, controlling other devices with voice commands or automating them. Wireless security cameras, $25 to $400. And you can view recorded and live footage on your phone and receive alerts when the cam detects people, packages, and more. 3. Video doorbells, $300 to $250. A video doorbell lets you view footage, receive alerts, and speak to visitors. Most need to be hardwired, but some are battery-powered. 4. Smart locks, $100 to $400. Smart locks give you keyless entry to your home and let you monitor who comes and goes from your smartphone. Number 5. Smart lighting, $80 to $100. Control your lights with your phone or voice to change brightness, color, and more from inside the house or out. There's a variety of devices here, bulbs, light strips, and fixtures, so well as smart on-off dimmer switches that work with your existing light fixtures. Number 6, smart plugs, $16 to $85. These small units connect a standard outlet to the internet. That means you can control whatever you plug into them, from a coffee maker to a space heater, using the smartphone or even smart speaker. Number 7, do-it-yourself security systems, $180 to $530. These internet-consistent systems promote easy setup and simplicity. And for a monthly fee, many offer optional monitoring devices, meaning there's a pro watching the alarms, just like with a traditional system. Number 8, smart thermostats, $85 to $400. The best have learning or logarithms that create custom heating and cooling schedules. Most work with digital assistants, so you can crank up the heat with a voice command. 9. Robotic vacuums, $190 to $1,300. These little vacs roam your floors to suck up dirt and debris with little to no input. Most connect to Wi-Fi for app and voice control. Number 10, smart TVs and streaming devices, $30 to $3,300. You may already own a smart TV or streaming media player to watch Netflix, Hub, Hulu, etc., but you can also control certain models with your voice using a smart speaker and use them to view connected cameras and doorbells. Number 11, water leak detector systems, $350 to $700. These systems watch for leaks and shut off the water supply to navigate damage. That seems like a little overkill. Number 12, smart garage door opener, $40 to $350. Connect your garage door to the internet so that you can open and close it and check whether it's open or closed from your smartphone or smart speaker. Number 13, smart sprinklers, $90 to $300. Replace your sprinkler system's well-mounted controller with one of these, and it will use weather forecast to adjust levels so that you don't move, you don't over or underwater your lawn. And let's go into details about these things. Start with a smart speaker. By the way, since we're all becoming more and more involved in the electronic stuff, and this is one of the things that's really good about visual impaired issues, because things like Alexa and Siri can make it so much easier for those who have vision problems to monitor these kind of things and also to control them as well. Start with a smart speaker. Connected speakers can take on a multitude of roles in your house. Speakers from Amazon or Google can add new abilities throughout voice apps known as skills or actions, while Apple smart speakers work with select apps from your iPhone or iPad. Here's a small sampling of what you can do with a single speaker and a few working together. Some tasks require minimal setup in the speaker's app, then they can be activated via voice command. Streamline your mornings. Launch a workout skill, such as easy yoga or 7-minute workout, to get in some exercise, and the speaker will broadcast the instructions. Listen to the morning news briefing from outlets such as NPR or USA Today while you make breakfast. With multiple smart speakers, you can ask the assistant to play a message throughout your home telling your kids the school bus is arriving soon or that it's time to log on for distance learning. Get the day's weather forecast before you head out the door, and if you designate your office location, you can ask Alexa or Google, "What's my commute looks like?" to check the traffic. Ask your speaker for a rundown of your calendar that day, whether you're attending meetings or in person or via Zoom. Create a multi-room sound system. You can do this with multiple speakers that use the same assistant, Alexa, Google, or Siri. When you set up your speakers for the first time, each assistant's app will walk you through the process of creating a multi-room speaker group. When you're finished, tell the assistant to, for example, play music downstairs. Enlist a sous chef. Alexa and Google-enabled smart speakers can help out in the kitchen. Need inspiration? Say, find recipes for blank. Then scan through the ideas. This requires a speaker with a touch screen. Use our picks and which we'll look at. When whipping up an elaborate meal or cooking separate dishes for picky eaters, set multiple kitchen timers with commands like, set a pasta timer for 10 minutes. Set a broccoli timer for 7 minutes. And when you run out of a staple during a meal prep, tell your smart speaker, add so-and-so to the shopping list. Ended up burning dinner? Ask your speaker to call your favorite restaurant so that you can order delivery. Keep track on elderly family members. If you have a loved one who lives alone, Amazon's free elder care feature for its smart speakers called Alexa Care Hub monitors their interactions with the speaker and sends you alerts if it notices no activity for an extended period. The feature allows you to call or video chat with your family member to check in, or they can ask Alexa to call you for help if needed. It could be a light touch way to keep an eye on a relative who wants to maintain a degree of independence, says Justice Brookman, Director of Privacy Technology Policy for CR. As with any surveillance technology, I can see potential for abuses too. People might not understand they're being tracked, especially if they're not the ones setting up Alexa. Use it as a security system. Thanks to its microphones and sound detection algorithms, your Amazon or Google speaker can stand in for a basic security system. Amazon's free service called Alexa Guard can alert you when you're away if your speaker detects the sounds of smoke, CD alarms, or glass breaking, or pay $5 a month for an upgraded version. With Google's Nest Aware service, $6 a month, your speaker will alert you if it hears a smoke alarm or glass breaking. You'll also be able to call your home's 911 dispatcher from the Google Home app, handy if you're out, though not from the speaker itself. Enable these services through Alexa and Google Home apps. Smart speakers with a screen, Amazon Echo Show, second generation, is $230. The Google Nest Hub Max is also $230. And the JBL LinkView is $300. Add more devices and control them with simple voice commands. Your smart speaker can interact with many other devices. With each new addition, you'll get increased functionality. The setup doesn't need to be complex. To connect devices to your speaker, you have to add them in your Assistant's app. For the Alexa app, Google Home app, or Apple Home app, know that not as many products work with Apple HomeKit, Siri, compared with Alexa and Google. Some products use the separate Apple Shortcuts or Google Assistant app to connect to their assistants. To get you alerted, started, here are six devices that can work with your speaker. A smart bulb plug switch. Give the lights a name in your assistant app and then say, for instance, turn on the hall lights. Video doorbell. Assistant, show me the front door. For step-by-step guides on connecting a doorbell to Alexa or Google, see our guides at cr.org/echo121 and cr.org/nest0121. Robotic vacuums. Start the robot vacuum. You need a connected model. See two our picks to taste below, which I'll list. Smart thermostats. Turn up the heat when you go. Wireless printer with Alexa. Print out the grocery list. Smart garage door. Close the garage door. And the vacuums are iRobot Roomba S9 Plus at $1,300 or the UFi 30C at $300. How to lock it all down? The simple truth bears repeating. Anything you connect to the Internet runs the risk of getting hacked or controlled remotely by someone else. To help mitigate such risk, follow these privacy and security guidelines. 1. Use a strong, unique passwords for each device and store them in a password manager so that you don't forget them. 2. Use two-factor authentication, if available, on all your devices. This feature sends a second temporary passcode to you via text, email, phone call, or an authentication app to verify that it's you trying to log into the device or apps or site. 3. Enable automatic updates on all devices that support it, including your Wi-Fi router. There is no perfect smart device that is secure forever, says Cody Feng, CR's test engineer. For privacy and security, automatic updates can shorten the amount of time that devices remain vulnerable to unpatched security flaws. Next, be thought about the rooms you'll place smart speakers in due to their always-on microphones, or mute them when you don't require their assistance. Periodically review and delete your smart speaker's audio recordings. Amazon, Apple, and Google let you do this with settings for their assistants. It might sound obvious, but aim security cameras where you need them, not where you don't. Avoid putting them in private areas such as bedrooms. Think twice about whether to give devices access to the location's data from your smartphone. It might be helpful for your smart thermostat to know when you're on your way home, but it's not that beneficial for your video doorbell. The trade-off? You might miss out on certain features, such as the ability to share your video doorbell footage with your neighbors. Automate even more by syncing multiple devices. To make your smart home truly run itself, you can create routines via your speaker's digital assistant. These simple programs, usually made up of them, then list that you create as if you are arm the security system, then turn off the lights. Once they're set up, certain conditions will automatically trigger the routines, or you can activate them with voice commands you choose. Both Amazon and Google use the term routines, but Apple differentiates between scenes and automations. Scenes are activated with your voice for a button press or a button press in the Home app. Automations run on their own. Control a few devices with single voice command. Use the Amazon Alexa, Google Home, Apple Home, and or Apple Shortcuts apps to create your own routines. The interface in each app is slightly different, but the process is essentially the same. You type in the command you want to give, such as Alexa, good night, then choose the devices you want to automate, along with the changes you want these devices to make. For example, you might select a smart plug connected to a fan and have it turn on. When you're done crafting your routine, enable it so that you can use the voice command. Here are a few basics to get you started. Good night. Lock the door, turn off the lights, and fire up the robotic vacuum to clean while you sleep. Good morning. Turn on the lights, turn up the heat, and play the morning news. It's movie night. Dim the lights, turn on the TV, and open Netflix. The complete step-by-step instructions on how to use Alexa, Google Assistant, and Siri HomeKit control your home, go to CR.org, Alexa 0121, or CR.org, Google 0121, or CR.org, Siri 0121. Let your smart home anticipate certain needs. The following routines happen automatically when certain conditions are met, but they're possible only with Alexa and Siri. Outside of voice commands, the Google Assistant can trigger routines only at specific time or when you leave arrive at home. Google users aren't completely out of luck, though. There are third-party services such as IFTTT, TTT, or Venomi that can use to automate all sorts of devices. Venomi is free. FTT charges a monthly fee of $4 after 3 free custom automations. When your security camera detects motion outside of night, you have your speaker's digital assistant automatically turn on or brighten outdoor lights. This is a great way to deter potential intruders at night without blaring an alarm. Simply create a routine that activates when your outdoor security camera detects motion at night and have them turn on outside lights or set them brightness to 100%. When you arm your security system, when you're leaving home, have your digital assistant set up the thermostat to turn down the heat. Do-it-yourself wireless security systems are Abode Essential Starter Kit at $250 and Simple Safe the Essentials S53 at $270. We have just a little bit to go, so I'm going to do some word power. As of the holiday season approaches, many of us turn to spiritual matters and end-of-the-year reflection. This contemplative quiz is full of words that refer to holy, soulful, or meditative practice. After you ponder, descend it to the next page for answers, which we shall do. And canticle. Is that a sacred flame, a small satchel, or a biblical song? It's a biblical song. The choir sang a canticle to begin Sunday's service. Asana. A sweat lodge, a yoga pose, or a spiritual guide? It's a yoga pose. Barbara's favorite asana is downward facing dog. Halal. In a trance, on a pilgrimage, fit or lawful? Fit or lawful. My family is Muslim, so I've always followed a halal diet. Mezuzah. A scroll hung by a door, a golden halo, or an organ of composition. It's a scroll hung by a door. The Rosens bought that pretty Missoula on a family trip to Israel. And Vespers. Evening service, silent worship, or winged cherubs. Vespers is an evening service. If we don't eat dinner soon, we'll be late for Christmas Eve Vespers. Genuflect. Donate, ponder, or kneel. Genuflect is kneel. After my knee surgery, I couldn't genuflect for a month. And llama. Llama is a prayer shawl, a humble offering, or a Buddhist monk. It's a Buddhist monk. And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. Be sure to listen in next time, and thanks so much for listening.